Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for all things Kings of War. Join your hosts, Mark Zielinski, Jeremy Duval, and Rob Phaneuf as they delve into the world of Mantica and bring you in-depth coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Jeremy Duval.
And I'm Rob Phaneuf. We're back again. Hey, man, it's like two in 2 weeks. That's pretty amazing, Jeremy.
It's going like gangbusters, Rob.
Almost like old times.
Old times.
Well, tonight, our big topic is going to be talking about Terrain Crate. Before we get there, let's go around. And Jeremy, I know we have a tournament coming up. What have you been working on?
Yeah, so Living Legends, Jeff's team tournament at the Black Eye Vodka Distillery in Texas is coming up. So my list for that is pretty much set. Todd Serpico, who's my social justice warrior partner, he's been working on some stuff. I know he's really excited to get on to doing some more projects with his rats, but he's playing Herd in our makeup. So he's just, you know, doing the last a bit of Guardian Brutes. He's got a really awesome color scheme for that. He's working on, for me, as I've mentioned in the last few episodes and episodes to come, I've been really repassioned working on my Basilane project. I kind of burned out, not on gameplay, but on hobby-wise. In the last month or two, I just hadn't really, I was maybe going to do a Twilightkin project, or I had a couple things sort of floating around, but really, again, really excited about the Basilanes. I've been doing some multi-basing, getting my color schemes together. I've been experimenting, Rob, with some new hobby products. So I picked up for my Cathedral and my Stone, I picked up the Reaper Stone Triad. You know, I've never really tried Reaper paints before. I know you're a big fan, and a lot of people are big fans of Reaper. So I thought that I would give them a shot. I've heard good things about their stone triads or their stone colors. So I picked up that, and I really like it. And I've been working on using on my stone maybe four or five different washes to add like rain streaking and moss, and like looking to try to do like add some visual interest. Usually in the past, you know, when I've done stone, it's like prime it black, dry brush it gray, dry brush it a lighter gray, dry brush it the final light gray, you know. And this I've been adding, you know, as I'm trying to grow as a hobbyist, I've been trying to add in some more visual detail. Also, I've been working, I don't know if you've tried them yet, Rob, with scale color, scale 75. Have you used
scale 75? I have not.
Oh, dude, they're amazing. I mean, I've had they have two lines. They have the main scale 75 and then the fantasy and games. So kind of similar to, you know, Vallejo and then Vallejo game color. Similar idea, right? And I have some both paints from their main line and from their fantasy and games line. And their fantasy and games set, I've had the complete set go in and out of my Amazon shopping cart in the last week and a half. The pigment is really dense. It's silky smooth. It thins perfectly. Like, you know, since the pigment is so dense, when you thin, the pigment doesn't break apart. A very nice paint line. So that's been one of the things I've been working on in my hobby besides just building and modeling, is I've been trying some different paints. I got the Vallejo Metal Color and Vallejo Model Air Metallics, which have both been pretty good. So I've just been kind of exploring some different paints, looking to maybe, you know, and not that there's anything wrong with the GW paints. I think they're a great starter paint set and they're, you know, good all purpose. But usually when you talk to these good hobbyists and you say, hey, what's your favorite paint line? They'll tell you, well, I like this paint from this brand or this paint from this brand. It's never like a one set to rule them all. So I've been kind of, you know, just trying to kind of experiment with different, with different paint lines. So I've just been working on that and working on my Basilanes. What about you? I know you've been hopping on After Dark, which has been just on fire the last couple weeks. We've been having daily 5, 6, 7-plus After Darks, member After Darks, so they've been going pretty good.
I've been wanting to try Scale 75. It sounds really interesting. And there's another one that Clubmate Dan has been using, War Colors, and it's like liquid pigment. And
oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
There's a couple new paints. Uh-huh. I mean, I like Reaper because I'm used to using it. It's very thin. They have the triad system, but hey, man, like you said, You know, like for example, washes and stuff. I still go to GW. I like the GW washes. The Vallejo makes some pretty nice metallics. You're always looking for stuff to add to your tool belt.
Yeah, I've heard the War Color is very good. Like you said, they have like a gel medium is the medium that's used. So it's supposed to give it like a really unique consistency. And also what I've heard is really good from War Color is their line of technical paints. Like they have a glaze medium, a retarder, they have four or five different technical like add paint additives that are supposed to be pretty good, I've heard.
Got a non-metallic metal line too that supposedly it's like one coat application and it just gives you that look with very little effort. So I'm eager to try that stuff. I need to get Dan on the podcast at some point. He's been working on a Rotaria list and has been using the War Colors, and they have a lot of transparent colors. So like, you know, Reaper has a triad of like three. I think War Colors have like seven in that range of color. So there's a lot, you know. It's pretty nice looking stuff.
Yeah, and they're interesting in the fact that it's like instead of like lightning blue or majestic elf, you know, teardrop, it's turquoise one.
Right.
Turquoise two. Turquoise three.
Exactly.
Turquoise four.
Obvious. What goes with what? So you did mention we've got Living Legends in a couple weeks, and so I'm playing with Chris Gibney, and he's taking his Trident Realm. You've seen his Trident Realm, right?
Oh, it's so creative. We were talking about that off air before the show started, but very creative army.
For those that haven't seen it, he's got a mostly Mantic with some cool mini or not, I guess a Wrath of Kings models mixed in. He's got a Cthulhu theme, so a lot of tentacles and stuff, and he's got a temple that's underwater, and so they're all standing on like temple bases, but they're all also standing in, you know, a foot of water. So it's kind of cool. He's really putting a lot of effort with, we're talking about paints, the Green Stuff World color changing paint.
Oh, the ghost tint stuff, I think. Is that what it's called? It's
actually called color changing, I think. And so
the way
you hold it from left to right, it actually changes from like green to red. He's used it through an airbrush, and it really, for very good effect and not a lot of effort, he's pulled off some pretty cool looking paint jobs. So I think everybody's going to be excited to see it here in a couple weeks. You know, he's got the basic stuff. You know, for those who don't know, Living Legends is a 1,100 point event times two, right? So it's two 1,100 point armies. And what I thought was really interesting, I'd like to hear your take on it, was this 50 point swing where you can take 50 points and slide it one way or the other. I love that. I think that's probably one of the coolest things ever.
It's really interesting because it gives you, you know, obviously when you're building a list with a partner, your guys are strategizing, but having that 50 points to sort of trade back and forth, I think adds a lot of interesting flavor to it of, you know, when you're down to that last couple of items. So I think that that's like you know, you run a doubles tournament. Is that something that maybe you might think about incorporating?
Totally stealing it. I'm totally stealing it. Because like you said, you know, Gibney kind of, he's running his Trident Realms, and he had basically an 1150 list that he liked. That just means I can come up with 1050, right? And so he's playing Trident Realms, and I'm playing Ogres. You know, 1050, we played around with a lot of ideas. Like, the idea that Devlin came up with, take three legions of warriors. I thought, oh, come on, how dull. Plus, that wouldn't be much fun to play against. So I brainstormed a little bit and came up with a couple things where I could paint some new units up. Because, you know, it's always fun for a tournament to paint up something new. Not, I don't want to paint a whole army.
But like add a unit or whatever.
So I painted up a horde of chariots, ogre chariots, and then I've got a boomer sergeant as well. So I heard ogre chariots were good, so they must be amazing, right? I mean, that's what I've heard.
Well, then that's the truth, right?
But we'll find out. And you know, hey, it's been fun painting them up. It was nice because I decided on ogre chariots. I'm like, well, I'll just go in the closet and pull out five chariots. No problem. All right. And when you have so much crap,
it's like your own game store in your closet. You're like, oh, I need some of this. Let me go into the stocking room.
Exactly. And you're just like, oh, let me just grab a box here, a box here. Yeah. So it wasn't so that was nice. I didn't have to buy anything. Right.
I have this reoccurring fantasy dream in which, I'm not dating Brie Larson, which is one of my real life waking fantasies. But in my fantasy dream, I have a warehouse, and in the warehouse, I have all my gaming supplies. So in the dream, I walk into the warehouse and I just walk up and down the rows of my personal warehouse space, and in it is like 25 packs of X-Acto blades, 13 packs of super glue, you know, all of this like what you would think of as being unsexy stuff, but it's just the older you get, the less I want to deal with not having the stuff that I want in life. And especially when it comes to hobby stuff, it's like, if I'm out of something, I want to go to my hobby shelf and have 13 of whatever it is, because I don't like having to go to the game store unless I really want to. I want all that stuff at home.
It's funny you say that, because a long time ago, I remember there's a guy named Tom McClure who is big into Warhammer Fantasy. I think he's playing AOS now. But I remember going to Tom's house, and I thought I was a bit of a hoarder. He puts us all to shame, because I'm like, what's over here? And it was just like piles and piles, but it was all organized. He knew where it was. Like, he literally had like every army of Warhammer, and he had like five or six of every regiment box. And it was just like stacked. And unfortunately now I'm kind of in that same boat where I've got just tons of stuff everywhere. So I've been trying to, well, you helped me clean up a little bit.
Yeah, I put some shekels in your coffer.
For sure, and I've got more coming. But back to the ogres, I did pull out and I did base up and paint up a horde. I did them in two regiments, so if I decide to run them as two regiments, I can. First of all, it's really hard to fit three of the Mantic chariots on a base. I don't know if you've ever tried that.
No, I know that they're big, and I think also running them as chariot is good, because then if you ever want to do the Hell on Wheels formation, I think is chariots.
Right.
You know, so that gives you that option. And I know that formation has been popular.
Basically, what I did was I put one regiment with three in the front and then two in the back. The one with three was really hard. I mean, the wheels are actually touching. And the outside wheels are like, are almost, you know, they're basically hanging off the base. It's really tough. And as Brian pointed out when I put it on Facebook, I didn't even use like the sized wheels. They have these little spikes that come off the wheels.
Like extra bits that you can put on the wheels if you want.
Cannot do that. There's not enough room on those bases to, you know, to do that. So, but I'm happy how they came out. You know, it was sort of fun just to kind of go, okay, open the little book that I had started back, you know, 5-6 years ago. All right, Mantic Ogres, step one, prime. You know what I mean? Like, I have like a, you know, 21.
A paint journal.
Exactly. And I just go boom, 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 boom. And I cranked them out, dude. I mean, I started like Wednesday night, and they're not going to win an award, but they look all right. And they were quick. So it was pretty fun. And like I said, I also got to do a little creative hobby with a Boomer Sergeant, and so I kind of converted him up a little bit. Instead of holding the gun with two hands, kind of he's swinging one up in the air and he's pointing with another hand. So it was fun. One thing I wanted to point out, though, is, you know, I'm always real negative on PVC, you know, mostly because of the details. They're a little soft. But one of the things that happened this time, which was amazing, was I got all done. I go to put the last ogre on the last chariot and he wouldn't fit. I was like, I guess I didn't try it out. I didn't, you know. And so he's all painted. Everything's painted. I hit it with a hairdryer and moved his arm into position. It was awesome. I was like, holy crap. I was like, that is really cool.
MacGyver.
Yeah. Actually, I was like, whoa. Because, you know, we all do the repositioning arms with the hot water. Be able to do that with a hairdryer after it's already painted was really, really cool. So I'm looking forward to the tournament. I'm driving down Gibney, you know, Gibney, so he's flying in. Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it. You guys are playing what armies?
So I'm playing Undead, and Todd is playing Herd, and we're playing Army Full of Hammers. So it's just like a bunch of fast beat face units, because I made sort of two lists, a more surgy, durable, defensive melee list, and then one that was a little bit more straightforward, run at you. And I think, since, you know, we'll be having cocktails plus the doubles tournament format, I think probably lends itself to playing less finessey sort of armies, more straightforward. I don't know if that's something you've noticed at Blue City, is the more straightforward sort of lists, you know, because you're playing with that new added dynamic of playing with someone else, that maybe the straightforward lists are a little easier to navigate in that format.
It is definitely easier. And I also think you don't have a lot of extra time for that, to develop that shorthand. So to play an army that, like, this army shoots, this army gets into combat, this army flies, you know, things that are like a little bit more straightforward. We used to call it Operation Grill. You just push it forward and smash face. And so that's what we're going to do. We got two of the best armies in the game, you know, with Trident Realms and Ogres, right? So, I mean, both neutral, so that's cool, you know, neutral for the win, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great event. I know that it's going to be one of the more unique venues. I know Jeff has done a lot of work into terrain. I don't know if you'll love that, because you're a terrain guy, Rob, but he's been posting some pictures of his terrain, and it's out of this world, like really cool looking stuff. And I know he's got some cool prize support with these nice flasks, because it's at a vodka distillery. So, So I think it's going to be a really fun event.
I love terrain, especially good terrain. And so I don't know. We'll be talking about more of this. We'll probably do some recording from the event. So I'm looking forward to it in a couple weeks.
Countercharge live.
Exactly.
Do it live.
Exactly. We probably, because I'm playing, we probably won't get as much as, say, at a normal event like the Masters, but we'll get a fair amount, hopefully.
I love me some Rob Phaneuf in the flesh, so.
Well, unfortunately, there's a lot more to go around, so. There's a
and for me, there'll be a lot less, Rob.
All right, well, let's get into some announcements. I don't know if you've been doing this, but I've been poking around Westphalia's website. I got a package a few weeks ago from Kawi, and I love his stuff. So I got poking around, and I see this thing on here called Gary Chalk Miniatures on his website. There's nothing on it yet, but I know who Gary Chalk is. everybody that's played Warhammer knows who Gary Chalk is, probably. Some of the most iconic artwork from back in the day. So it sounds like there's something coming. Miniatures based on his artwork. And then also on their website, they also have there's a role-playing game called The Dark Eye, which I've never heard of, but I guess it's a German role-playing game from long ago. Kawi and Westphalia is producing miniatures for that. And those are actually already on Kickstarter. And if you want to find it, it's just called Heroes of Adventuria. And so his goal was $2,000. He's already got $26,000. You know, he must know what he's doing. And it's just a bunch of resin characters. I mean, it's really cool. And you don't have to buy them all. You can buy one or two or 10 or whatever. So if you're into very characterful... is that a word?
Characterful.
Characterful. It's the same sculptor he's used all along. Paul Hicks, I think, but I'm going to look at it.
And like you said, he looks...
And it's amazing stuff.
And if you don't know who Gary Chalk is, just Google it. And then all of a sudden, for me, it's like my childhood come to life again.
Yeah.
You know, of that old school, a lot of the old school GW art is very much, you know, his stuff and his style. So I hadn't heard that. So that's exciting.
We'll have Kawi here on. We're working on details. Now he's in Canada. Because you've been doing the whole UK conversation thing the last few weekends.
Yes, with 3 weekends in a row for our Vanguard coverage, which we'll be releasing soon. We've been recording with the UK stuff, so that means getting up at 4:45 on a Sunday, which
a.m.
you know, in the morning. But you know, I'm happy to do it. I'm really excited. I think it's going to be some great content. You know, shout out to Mantic for giving us access to the people behind the games that we love to try to get more info out to the community. So, but you know, it's just early.
Big thanks to Ronnie and Matt. We love both those guys. They've been with us from the beginning. So even before Matt even worked for them, you know, we had Matt on, a long, long time ago.
And then, like on the topic of Mantic, Rob, we just got a notice. It's been going around Twitter that Joe Need is moving on in his career from being the main North America sales guys for Mantic. So congrats to Joe. I see that he is going to be working maybe in a government job, and having myself sucking on the warm teat of government work. Congratulations to him and the health insurance that he is probably about to receive.
Right.
And pension, maybe. That's one benefit of working for government, is that you do get some benefits, which is nice. But anyway, I digress. Congratulations to him. You know, thank you to him for everything he's done for helping grow the Mantic IP and Mantic games in the U.S. And I think it should be interesting to see who they bring in next. You know, sometimes new blood is always a good thing. So I'm excited. You know, we'll have to get whoever that replaces him on the show. And, you know, because I think that's definitely, and this was one thing we talked about in the Ronnie episode, which is to grow Mantic in the U.S., we really need to find a way to get them in stores. And not only get them in stores, but get people buying their stuff in stores, you know. So hopefully that can be a dialogue and conversation that we explore over time, is what can we as community people do to help do that? Because I feel the tournament scene is growing and good, but the scene in the stores is not where I think any of us would like to see it. So what can we do to change that, basically?
I think that's probably an episode for us in the near future. Because, you know, I've been talking to a fair amount of local retailers that are, you know, in some cases struggling to keep the line alive in their local, you know, local scene. So we got to put our heads together and figure out how we make that possible. You know, how do you, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but, you know, I guess the short answer is everybody needs to pay where they play, right? We need to be buying stuff locally. And if they're not stocking it, ask them to stock it.
And, you know, kind of it reminds me too of this, or what came first, the chicken or the egg, in regards to, do I got to buy the stuff to get them to make the cool stuff? Or once they make the cool stuff, then I buy the stuff, you know? And I always feel it's like, build it. They will come.
Absolutely.
You know, you build nice miniatures, you get those miniatures in a storefront, people will buy them. And I think and we cover this in the Vanguard episodes, but really the Vanguard Minis is one of the first full line of Mantic models where I've truly been excited and wanting to go buy them. So hopefully, you know, as we talked about in those episodes, there's going to be a more attention spent to packaging and marketing and the look of those products. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that we'll see Vanguard materialize into what they want it to be, which is, you know, a feeder into Kings of War. And, you know, I think that, you know, Mantic's growing as a company. But, yeah, I think as a community, we need to think about to keep the tournament scene vibrant, which right now it's vibrant. I mean, there's so many events. There's too many events to go to.
There's almost too many events, actually.
There's too many. So to keep that good, we need to get it alive in the store. So I know, like, next year for us, we're going to focus a little less on running one-day tournaments. And I've talked with Britton and some of the other local guys, and we're going to be doing some demo days, both Vanguard and Kings of War demos, maybe do some campaign stuff. So just try to find ways of getting the player base growing. So not only is there a vibrant, thriving, competitive tournament scene, but we get some of the people who maybe would be into the system and play in a tournament every now and then, but that's not their main focus. Give them a sandbox to play in as well.
There's an active conversation in the region, the Southeast region, about how do we incentivize the one-day events or the one, you know, the demos and that stuff, because there's a lot of people that don't really have the ability to go to a two-day event, but still like Kings of War. And so how do we bring them into the fold, so to speak? And so I know Rome Bruce, who is a bit of an infamous name. Have you met Rome before on Facebook?
I haven't, but I think I've seen some of the postings, so right. I get where you're coming from.
Right, so he's a bit infamous. And so he's kind of jump-started the conversation because he's one of those guys that doesn't go to tournaments. Unless they're in Florida. And so he's looking at ways to, you know, jumpstart the small scale scene, which, you know, I'm excited about.
Inclusivity is important. And I think that for the greater health of the hobby, if you can make space in the hobby for all types of players, because you've said this for a long time, Rob, events need players of all skill levels to be successful. And so it's what can we do to give those different skill level players encouragement to take part in different events. So I think that's an ongoing conversation. Like you said, you guys are having it in the Southeast page. They've been talking about it in the Pacific Northwest page. You know, I think this is a conversation that we're having. And I think it's good. I mean, we've had a couple good conversations about that and about clock usage lately. And I think, you know, Facebook doesn't have to be flame wars. I think we can have really good conversations about these topics that we don't always agree on. But I think the dialogue that we've been having on all these bunch of topics has been pretty good lately. Okay, well, I think that's some good stuff. It's good to get caught up. And I just got to say, I love having you back on the airwaves, Rob, as you were sorely missed during your summer vacation to Wally World and other – that may be too old of a reference.
No, not for me, sir. In fact, I'm one of these guys that, like, when I watch a movie, I've got to know where they actually filmed it. And so that was actually filmed out in Southern California with the Wally World. It was actually Six Flags. So, yeah, I got the reference.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s, and one of the things my dad shared with us the most was his love of, like, the 80s era Saturday Night Live casts. So Trading Places, Vacation, all those movies, I just grew up on those movies. So,
funny segue. My daughter is, she is 9 years old, and she is hooked on 80s movies in general. And
dude, so, that's awesome.
Yeah, and, like, the weird ones. So, like, I'm like, Aubrey, do you want to go to Disneyland? She's like, no, I want to go to Universal Studios so I can see the E.T. ride. I'm like, okay, we'll go to Universal Studios. Her newest obsession is not Short Circuit 1, Short Circuit 2, which arguably is the better of the two movies.
Johnny Five Alive. I feel alive. Have you shown her the Goonies yet?
Oh, absolutely. Last Starfighter, Goonies.
Oh, Last Starfighter. Oh, my goodness.
Last Starfighter, man. Yeah, man. It's great stuff, man. I mean, I'm old, so it's good to have a partner in crime because my wife hates these movies. So
it's your mini you. So.
Exactly. So she's painting. She's board gaming. And now she's watching awesome, awesome movies that, you know, we just can't get enough of.
Well, that makes you a happy dad. And on that note, we'll take a break. And then on the other side, we're going to come back and we're going to hear all about the Terrain Crate.
Your hosts, Jake and Greg, as they cover the world's most exciting fantasy miniature game, Kings of War. On the world's most exciting fantasy miniatures podcast, Unplugged Radio. Talk background, miniatures, tactics, and more. That's Unplugged Radio. Find us on iTunes or on our website, unpluggedradio.com. Just replace the G's with threes. And keep counter charging.
And we are back. So as Rob said at the open of the show, we're going to talk about Terrain Crate, which is Terrain Crate, plastic, affordable, fantasy terrain. So I know we're excited to talk about this. This was one of Mantic's recent Kickstarters and a really kind of cool, unique idea. It had 3725 backers and raised over $600,000. Pretty good, successful Kickstarter. It funded back in May of 2017. And I know Rob picked it up. I think you ended up getting three crates.
Dungeon, town, and battlefield. Yeah, three crates. Yeah, it was a... I think the deal was $180. So full disclosure, I didn't get anything for free. This is this is all my money. I always like to hear that because when you listen to some reviews and people have gotten it free, it's like you wonder, does it affect what they're saying?
And that's true. We all have a bias, and that's one thing that, you know, and I know that GW's been doing that lately, giving free product out for people to review, which is great for them. And I think it's good because we want to see reviews. But there's always, I think, that small fear is you wonder if you're going to get like an honest opinion.
I got the three crate pledge. It was $180 plus shipping. And in that one, I selected the dungeon, the town, and the battlefield. On paper, it sounded like a good deal. You said that, you know, last May 2017, they ended. We got the surveys in June of 2017, and basically we locked down what we wanted July 1st, 2017. A year later, on July 3rd, I got a tracking notification from UPS saying that I have a 9-pound package on the way. And I received it July 6th, 2018. So we'll get into the nitty gritty, but overall, you know, I think the timing was okay, right? I mean, all Kickstarters are late. Let's just cut to the chase.
That's just the nature of the beast, right?
It is. And for it to only be a few months late, I think we can live with that. In terms of my pledge, the first crate that I selected was Dungeon Crate. And that was like, if you look on the Kickstarter website, you'll see it, but it's basically like a wizard study, abandoned mine, dungeon debris. Like, it's really good for scatter terrain, like barrels and boxes, and then a treasure room where it's like piles of gold and stuff. And then I also selected the Town Crate, which was, again, a library that had a lot of the same things in the previous crate, but like bookshelves and desks and that kind of thing. A blacksmith and stable, which is like, it was a horse and a cart and, you know, all the things you'd find in a blacksmith shop. There was a guard's barracks, which is like weapons and archery targets and, you know, beds. And then I got the tavern. It's a tavern, so it's like bars and kegs and that kind of thing. And then the final crate, which I think what you're going to hear in a minute is the best crate, is the battlefield crate. And it was a baggage train, which, you know, it's a cart with a horse and a bunch of stuff to go in that. There's a campsite with all kinds of tents and sleeping bags and fires and all kinds of stuff like that. There's fences and there's hedges, walls. Those are the three crates that I got. Kind of an overview of the Kickstarter. First of all, I want to talk about communication. You know, there was actually 73 updates, 16 of which were after the project funded on 514. So
that's pretty good. I mean, yeah. that's pretty good for a Kickstarter, I would say.
Yeah, they did a great job. I mean, most of the communication happened during the Kickstarter, which is normal for Mantic. But even after the project funded in May of 2017, we still got 16 more. I think overall they did a really good job of keeping the backers informed of, you know, what was going on with the project. Next, timing. I mentioned it before. It was 2 months late, but Jeremy, that's normal for Kickstarter.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's Kickstarters that you don't ever get it, or you get it 6 months late. So I would say for me, for a Kickstarter to be successful, it's probably like either on it's delivered on the date that they promise or within like 1 to 3 months of when it was promised, I think is probably pretty good for Kickstarters.
Next, let's talk shipping. For the three crates, I paid $21, which is interesting because on the Kickstarter page, it actually indicated $18. But I'm not going to complain about $3 because it turns out they kind of made a misstep in Canada. And I don't know if you heard about this, Jeremy, but
the folks, customs issues. I was hearing some customs problems.
It was brokerage fees. I guess Mantic chose UPS. And so people were paying upwards of $100 to get their shipment from UPS plus the shipment. It was just crazy. Like I said, an extra $3, I'm cool with that. If you want to read about it, just go to the Kickstarter page. It's all you're going to read about for the first like three pages of comments is the Canadian backers that are, I mean, rightfully upset, right? $100 when you spend, you know, $108 and then you spent $100 more.
Yeah. Because when you're doing it, you know, as it's no secret, the Kickstarter has become in many ways a discounted pre-order system. So when you're putting money in to help fund a project and get your discounted pre-order, if you end up having to pay as much as retail to make up for those shipping costs and you're getting it roughly at the same time that you could have went down to your local store and buy it in person, I could see. I mean, I think that's a fair frustration to have.
The next question that I was going to ask is, you know, did I get everything I was promised? And I would say, generally speaking, yes. I think I got what I thought I was going to get. I mean, they made some design changes. Like there was supposed to be beds with like legs, and instead I just got extra bedrolls that were like on the ground. So, you know, there was a couple little design changes that were different than the pictures in the Kickstarter, but overall, pretty much the quantity and the quality of what I was expecting to get is what I got.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and like you said, sometimes you'll get stuff that's where the models are slightly different from the concept art. But I mean, in the end, when you're kickstarting something, you're hoping that you're going to get what's advertised.
Absolutely. So that was kind of just an overview of the Kickstarter. Let's talk about now the product itself. You know, take Kickstarter out of it for a while and just talk about the product. Initial impression for me, when I opened the box, I have to be honest, I was a little bit meh. As I opened the crates, I was struggling to see how I was going to use most of it. But I will say my opinion has improved over time as I had a chance to really sit down and play with it. The next thing I want to mention is design. So I really, really, really like their aesthetics choices here. They specifically chose a generic fantasy for the pieces. And what that does is it doesn't tie it to a specific game. It doesn't tie it to a specific world. It's just it's a pile of gold. It's a bed in roughly 28, 30 millimeters, you know, in roughly like heroic scale. And so you could totally use this for your D&D game or Dungeon Saga. I've already been thinking, man, there's probably games in my board game collection where I could take out cardboard tables or chairs and swap them out for plastic pieces. One of the other things about the design that I really liked, though, was that the pieces were all designed with kind of like a Lego idea behind them. So like the walls are broken out into their individual pieces. So you had like a straight section, a corner. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So there's some, you can kind of customize how you want to use it.
Correct. So when I built my walls, you know, I built them into like smaller assemblies and then based them on MDF bases. And so I can lay them out differently each time. But if you wanted to, you could just completely build a courtyard permanently mounted on a base, and that's fine too. So design-wise, I really was quite happy with the overall designs of the pieces and the aesthetic. As I mentioned a little bit, some of the pieces are a little bit harder for me to see a use for. You know, that's not their fault.
Yeah, it seems like in just kind of looking over the different sets that this would be a great purchase for someone like a tabletop gamer, I think of, and not necessarily just a war gamer, but someone who plays Zombicide or D&D or any of the cool Mini Imnot games or something like that. If you wanted just like a big giant accessory pack that you could, like you say, just drop into any sort of tabletop things, that it seems like that's how you're going to maximize your value from this is if you're playing lots of different types of tabletop games as opposed to, as you said, just like miniature battle games.
So the next thing I want to mention is price. Each crate came with a nice box that kind of is printed to look like a wooden chest. Inside the wooden chest, there's a cardboard divider that can split the box up into six sections, which you can use to divide up your treasure piles from your tables. It's a setup box, think shoebox, so that means it's really quite sturdy. My only criticism is that, you know, they put labels on the box that says like town crate, dungeon crate, if I'm going to use it for something else, or if I was like gone in, if I went into Kickstarter with a partner and we're trying to swap pieces, it kind of makes it a little bit more difficult to split up the crates. But, you know, that's nitpicking, right? Let's talk about the actual prices. Each crate was stated to have a minimum of $135. So that would imply that my pledge would cost $405 rather than the $180 I spent. The crates that I actually got will never actually hit retail in that exact configuration. But in reality, there's no way these crates would ever cost $135. However, that's not to say there's not good value here. So my dungeon crate cost me $60, right? Three crates, $180, 60 a piece. And it has 113 pieces. Online, Mantic has a dungeon depths crate, which is $80 and has about 80 pieces. You can currently find that on Amazon for $75, eBay for $70. And I'm sure once it gets into the retail channels and you get your normal discounting kicking in, you know, you'll get it down to $65 or $60. So essentially the Kickstarter discount that we all like was essentially 40 extra pieces, plus a better box. Some may argue the retail box is better because it's got a thermoformed insert, but I actually like the generic cardboard. In terms of the other two crates, I can't really give it a breakdown for price because they don't have those out yet. So all they have right now is the dungeon crate. But I would be shocked if we didn't see more of the same, you know, an $80 crate that's roughly some of the pieces we got in the battlefield, or an $80 crate that's roughly most of the stuff that's in the town crate.
Yeah, and like you said, I mean, to me, that seems like not crazy for terrain if, like you said, you find uses for it all. That the frustrating thing would be, I guess, if I got this and only wanted to use one or two things, then I would have a box of all this stuff that I would never use. But it seems like to me, if you're going to find use for all this stuff, all these smaller pieces of terrain, that the value would be pretty cool based on the quality. You know, now that you've had it for a little while, what are your thoughts on the because I know, like you said, at first you were maybe a little on the fence of the quality, but how do you feel now that you've had it for a little bit?
You know, Jeremy, we all knew going in that this was not going to be hips. We knew that it was going to be some PVC-based material, sort of the thing you would find in a board game, not much different than, say, like a bones material. The positives that I love are it's all done in pre-colored plastic, which means if you don't want to paint it, you don't have to. It also means the pieces are pretty much indestructible, right? I mean, you're not going to break. You could cut them, but you're not going to break them. You know, I knew it was going to be PVC material, but I didn't consider the design of the piece, how that would impact the pliability. And what I mean by that is there are some pieces like the bookcases, basically a big chunky piece, you can't bend it at all. There's absolutely no bending. But then you have like other pieces that are like torch, like a standing torch lamp. It's so thin, you could literally tie the torch in a knot if you wanted to. There's a bunch of different tents, like big giant tents like you would see in the Narnia movie, or like tents you'd see in like Civil War movie. The tents really kind of reminded me of like a Chinese made dog toy, real squishy. Another example, the walls really thick and really don't bend very much. So in terms of the pliability, it was really all over the place, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So really dependent on, you know, I think, and that's the thing with that material, the PVC, I think, and you see it in the bones stuff too, is that usually that does seem to work better with bigger stuff.
I gotta mention, there's a weapons rack though. That's probably the funniest piece in the whole thing. It's like a little rack and there's like halberds and swords sticking up. So the rack itself is actually pretty thick and beefy and doesn't really bend. But like the weapons pile, you know, coming up off the top, they're like maybe a 16th of an inch thick shafts. And like, they just, you could tie them in knots. I mean, they're so, so bendy. It's just funny. I did think, though, I probably could cut them apart and actually replace the shaft with like a brass rod if I was so inclined.
And what did you think of the treasure piles? That was kind of the more sort of kind of fun stuff. How does the treasure stuff?
It was super, super bendy, but, you know, and I'll mention it in a minute, you know, I put all of my, when I use terrain, I mount them on MDF. And so with the treasure pile, you just cut out a piece of MDF and you glue it down. And once it's got a base, it's not bendy, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think having like a basing your terrain, I think, is just a good idea in general. I think it helps increase, you know, one issue you run into terrain is long-term damage use. Mm-hmm. And I think you can help mitigate that damage to buildings or whatever if you just put them on like, you know, a little like MDF, flock it up. And then when you're moving the terrain, you're picking it up by its base or whatever. So I think that's a good tip for people making terrain at home outside of just using it on this, is basing your terrain on stuff like that. It, I think, is good in increasing its survivability long term.
Yeah. And I would say it just basically also mitigates any issues you have with the bending or the pliability of the material. It really kind of cuts it out. I mean, once you got a base, it's not going to be bendy anymore. I can live with the bendiness. One of the areas that is a little dodgy is some of the assembly. Some of the pieces that are assembled, you know, you can, like the hedges are maybe the worst. When they glued them together, there's like this really nasty gap between the two. There's also like tables where the pieces that were pliable, right, and they were maybe warped. And then when they put them together, they're still warped, and now you can't fix them because of the way they're constructed. Assembly's not great, but I have to always say this, Jeremy, I am super picky about that kind of stuff, right? I have very high expectations for my terrain, so.
Yeah, I think thinking about your target audience, you know, and we were talking about this before, which is, you know, the hobbyist who has in his hobby closet, you know, rare imported Japanese style steel X-Acto blades because they've cut better or whatever, mm-hmm. you know, that some of this stuff for the more, I guess, advanced hobbyists, it might not be ideal, but, you know, when you're thinking about value, maybe for someone who's has nothing to start off with, like, what do you think value-wise for someone maybe who has no terrain at all? And they're just looking for like an entry level, like, I'm going to run my first event, or I want to start having games. Do you think value-wise, this is good for maybe someone just getting into train?
Value is an interesting topic, Jeremy. I wish I knew then what I know now. You know, as a Kings of War player that was just getting into it, I would tell them, just get the Battlefield crate. I think the Battlefield crate is actually an exceptional value. It's got pieces that are very geared towards Kings of War. And in fact, I think even on the Kickstarter page, they tell you that. It's things that'll make blocking terrain, walls, fences, that kind of stuff. The other crates I got, like the dungeon crate, I could make some really cool pieces out of it, but it's going to require so much work and so much planning that unfortunately that means it's never going to get done. You know, because realistically, if I'm going to put in that level of effort, I'm not going to use cheap plastic pieces. You know, I'm going to buy resin terrain to do that. And the town crate, ironically, had me the most interested because I'm actually working on a new table for Blue Sea Brawl where it's a giant tavern. Like, the whole table is a tavern. So there's, like, tables and all kinds of crazy stuff. But, like, the scale of the pieces really don't work for what I'm looking for. Realistically, the town crate, great for Dungeons & Dragons. It's amazing because it gives you, you know, things that you need for your dungeon. I guess what I'm saying is, in terms of value, I would steer someone that's playing Kings of War primarily to the Battlefield crate. If you like the other stuff and you want to use it on bases, you could do that. But I mean, I think stay towards the Battlefield crate unless you're into Dungeon Saga. I mean, how would you, if you pick this up, what would you use it for?
For me, in looking at it, and I ask for the treasure stuff because I have an idea for a dwarf army that I want to do as like they're underground. So it's like they're an underground mining, and so all the basing would be themed to being like actually underground. So for this, I see a lot of these pieces as really cool. You know, if I wasn't going to use them for tabletop RPG, I would use them for multi-basing. You know, multi-basing is really interesting when you can have sort of different types of materials, heights, textures, you know, like some of the, if you want to do any sort of interior scene, multi-basing are like half outside, half inside or whatever. So a lot of that stuff could be cool. Like, so when I looked at the abandoned mine set, mm-hmm. to me that the abandoned mine, the dungeon debris, the treasure room, and then the bar, the tavern, mm-hmm. that's like all awesome dwarf multi-basing is like where right. my imagination went to first. So I could see the terrain, the Battlefield crate being the most functional for terrain. And this other stuff for me is not, I don't do that much D&D. So to me, it would be like multi-basing display board. Like, hey, you want to do a display board, stuff for your display board. This would be great for that, I think.
Well, let's get into final thoughts. The first thing I want to mention is painting. This is a PVC material. It's very similar to bones in that you can't use enamel-based rattle cans. Right, I went at the stuff with my normal grape Krylon primer, and it stayed sticky. Fortunately, I was just able to slather on layers of craft paint over top, and it's fine now, and it seems to be holding. Rob Berman did reach out and did tell me that they're using the Army Painter sprays. He says there's no problem with it staying sticky, so it's my go-to primer that I always use on everything. I'm one of those guys that I don't want to have 17 different color paints. I just want a primer that works on metal, works on plastic, works on wood, you know. And unfortunately, it doesn't work on this material. So you either got to spend a little bit more money and buy better spray paint, or you got to brush it by hand. Or I guess you could also airbrush it, would be another option. So just keep that in mind. In terms of the Kickstarter, I thought it was organized. It was well run. You know, I'm not going to say it was perfect. Obviously, the Canadian thing was a bit of a snafu. I think it was an adequate first step to starting a range of terrain. And I look forward to seeing how they can extend it. You know, I can totally see them adding houses. They've got all the stuff to go in the house. Give me the house now. One thing I need to mention, though, is I don't really think I'm the target demographic for this product. To me, the sweet spot in value is someone that needs terrain but wants to limit their investment of time or money. So like people that want to make it cheap or fast, this is for them. Like for example, if a TO has to knock out a bunch of tables quickly, this is right in their wheelhouse. I'm not their target demographic. Jeremy, what do you think? Are you kind of, you think you kind of fit into more of their target demographic?
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe for people who have less time and who want to, for me, for terrain, I mean, I do complex detailed multi-basing, but when it comes to terrain, my favorite terrain is Battlefield in the Box.
Gale Force 9 for the win.
I mean, that stuff's so amazing because it's, you just flock it, it's all pre-painted. And to me, I would rather pay for I want to buy terrain that looks good and is okay, but is the least amount of time for me. So it's, to me, it's like a necessary evil. Like, how do I balance quality versus ease? Because I have such limited time, I want to be spending that time painting armies and not necessarily painting terrain. So that's why that Battlefield in a Box things is such a sweet spot for me, because it's a perfect combo of value versus quality. I mean, it's not amazingly painted.
It's good though. It is very good for pre-painted stuff. It's some of the better stuff.
Yeah, it's as good as you're gonna get for affordable pre-painted terrain, and it's frustrating because a lot of that stuff's not available. So whenever I see it in a store, I just buy.
Snap it up.
I just get, you know, I have the full elf set and some trees and some swamps and stuff.
That's the river of choice for me. Their river is amazing.
It's really great. So I see this sort of kind of like an infant in that sort of segment of functional, like you said, functional terrain. I think the key is to see where do they go from here. You know, are people going to be cool with some of the material issues? But to me, I see the most value of this, like I said earlier, is coming from someone who does all sorts of tabletop gaming and not just miniature wargaming. And they just want, they want a cool accessory pack for Warhammer Quest or, you know, Hero Quest. People still play that. You know, Mantix Dungeon Saga, or D&D.
Or just D&D, yeah. Or Pathfinder. I mean, this is
Pathfinder.
The perfect set for, yeah.
Totally. So I see, if I play all those games, I think this is an insane value for what you get. And, you know, and like you said, if you haven't ordered it yet, I bet you, you know, this may be something you can pick up on discount because it is sort of like to a certain clientele. So maybe you'll find it in a store where for whatever reason they just didn't sell it. But I think if you're going to use it for different things, and like I said, I'll probably, if I ever do a dwarf army, I'll probably get the mines, you know, get all those mm-hmm. pieces for my display board or multi-basing. But I think it's a great idea. To me, I'm making easy, affordable, functional terrain that's somewhat plug and play. That's the kind of terrain I like, just because I'd rather be painting models personally.
One thing that I wish they would have done is, you know, the Battlefield crate is really good for Kings of War, but why didn't they add some trees? What, I mean, if they're going to go to this level, why not just add 6 solid little trees that we could have stuck on a base? You know what I mean? That would have made it really, really useful, because you could pretty much do everything else. You can pretty much do all of the types of terrain in Kings of War with this Battlefield set, but you can't do the forest.
And see, that would make sense to me of if they were to do a terrain crate or whatever with Kings of War, and on the back you turn it over and it's too impassable, too difficult,
yeah,
too obstacle. You know what I mean? Like, they have terrain in the kit that are specifically designed to be what they correspond to in the game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that might be what they do, because like I said, right now they only have the dungeon depths crate out for retail. The Battlefield crate will go out at some point. Maybe they're going to package it in a way where you're getting enough to do 2 blocking pieces of terrain, enough to do 6 obstacles. You know what I mean? Maybe they'll think that through and say, I'm designing to get you 10 pieces of terrain. But trees would have been a really, really nice touch. My final comment though, Jeremy, is I'm kind of at a point where I'm done with Kickstarter. if that makes sense. I'm just ready to just wait for it to get to retail and give it my money to my local store.
Yeah, I mean, you know, my opinion on Kickstarter, and I think I've said it on the show, is that when I get excited and I'm going to buy something, I want to take it home with me and cuddle up with it in my bed like a little kid with his Christmas toy. I don't like purchasing something and then waiting a year for it to come out. It's a total buzzkill. I don't like it. I'm not a fan. So I've always struggled with purchasing stuff on Kickstarter for that very reason. Like, I just ordered the Redgrass Gaming wet palette, Ultimate wet palette.
How is it?
I ordered it. I haven't got it yet. But I was going to kickstart it back before, but I just don't like Kickstarters. I mean, I get what it's for. I get it. I understand its value. It's just, for me, I want to go down to my store. I want to get it on Amazon or whatever the case is. I'm like, when I buy it, I want it. Waiting a year for a product to come is tough, just because who knows if I'm even going to be doing that in a year. You know what I mean? So it's hard to get, you know, specific theme stuff and then wait. So for me, especially now, since Kickstarter so much has become a pre-order system, as opposed to, like, if I don't Kickstarter it, I don't feel anymore that the product won't get made. Because that's an element of Kickstarter, right? Which is, if I want this cool stuff to come out, I'm helping it come out. But now the stuff's going to get made anyway. It's just a way that if you want a slight discount, you can pre-order it. And to me, I just would rather... And also, too, there's something to be said about tactically in your hands holding a box, looking at the box, you know, looking at the back of the packaging. I sometimes it's nice to hold something in your hands before you buy it.
If these would have been in front of me, I would have just bought three boxes of the battlefield terrain.
No, that makes sense what you're saying. Like you said, you know, I mean, there should be materials in the hobby for people at all different stages, like entry level, intermediate, and people who like more advanced. You know, not everyone needs to paint with, you know, Da Vinci or Winsor Newton sable brushes. You know what I mean? But I'm glad it's good that they exist, you know, just as it's good that army painter, synthetic brushes are around. So it's okay to have...
It's exactly like me and my daughter. My daughter's paint station is all army painter paints and painter brushes. And so she's in a different place in the hobby. She's super rough on her brushes, and I'm not going to give her an expensive brush, right? I mean, to make, you know, and the paints are very opaque and they cover quick on the first go. Yes, you may lose some detail if you don't really thin them down, but she's learning, and it's the perfect, you know, it's sort of like there's the right tool for wherever you are in this hobby.
And that army painter stuff, I totally recommend. If someone was to say, Jeremy, I'm just getting into the hobby, what should I do? I would say go buy the army painter paint set.
Not expensive. And it's like 50 paints, I think. And she has all the colors she could need. She could start learning about, she's learning about shades and different technical, like there's even like technical paints like blood. And what else we got tonight, Jeremy?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, give a shout out to Pacific Northwest guys. They have some event coming up in Portland. Check out their Facebook page. Shout out again to Dustin Church, Dan Wright. Those are the two main guys in Portland. Shout out to Ryan Munsell and Tom Millard. They're the guys in Seattle. You know, we did an episode with them recently, but in Clash of Storms, I got a chance to hang out and spend more time with Dan Miner, who's now my favorite Canadian. Just like,
he's so awesome.
Such a nice guy. He's such a nice guy. Very loving, very caring, a good hugger. You know, him and Ryan Smith are my two favorite huggers that I've got to meet while getting into the hobby. And, you know, he is a big proponent of the special sauce of why we do this, which is the friendships we make. You know, shout out to Rashad. He's doing a one-day tournament that's Conan-themed coming up, the Riddle of Steel GT, which we'll have to do an episode after that. But it looks like Southern California now is starting to get their act together. So there's like a lot of stuff happening in SoCal, which is fantastic for California. So, and I think, you know, our biggest thing moving forward is, like I said, Rob, is the Bay Area, is that we're going to try to start doing maybe not quite as many one days in a year, and we're going to trying to start doing some store demos. I mean, that's really where we're at, a point now where until we can get the stores to carry Kings of War or carry Mantic products, I don't know how to grow the community.
You kind of reached saturation with the competitor gamers already.
I think so.
And now you need to grow the casual gamer. And yep. Hey, so here's a question.
Sure.
Tom Millard or Dan Miner?
Well, I mean, they're both super nice in different ways. Tom is very, like, soft-spoken and reserved, very dry wit sense of humor. And Dan is more of like, let's get drunk and party sort of kind of dude.
So they're like almost complete opposites.
Dan is like my mom, who he just gives me love. Tom is kind of like my dad, where sometimes I think he doesn't like me very much. And that makes me want his attention and affection that much more. Yeah, I kind of think he doesn't like me sometimes, and then he does. So then it's like I'm on a rocky roller coaster of a relationship, whereas Dan is just unconditional love. So I have room in my life for both.
Shout out for me. We have the Forge GT coming up in November 10th and 11th in Homewood, Alabama. You're going into the Cobra's Den when you go to this event. It is run by the Sons of Vulcan. They bring all the filth. So you will not find.
So that's like Nate Clevenger and all those exactly. guys, right?
Yeah, exactly. And Nate did a great job last year with his first one, and I can't wait. I don't get to Alabama very much. There's probably a reason for that, but I did enjoy. It's a suburb of Birmingham, so I did enjoy it, though. It was a lot of fun.
I think that's it. I think this is some good stuff. You know, keep tuned for our Vanguard. We have a bunch of great Vanguard content coming out over the next few weeks. Keep a listen for that. You know, remember to check us out on website, Ohio Hammer, on Facebook, on Twitter. You know, shout out again to Kevin Von Felt, who helped set up the After Dark Facebook group. So now we have a Countercharge Facebook group, and then we also have an After Dark one just for a little bit more specific After Dark action. And again, just After Dark, if you have any questions about that, let me know. We're having it pretty much, I would say, 3 to 5 times a week now, as opposed to just on Friday. And if you want to do it, yeah, and if you want to do it, there's lots of people who would be down, but on a weeknight, unless you get a message going, someone won't hop on. But if you're wanting to do some painting, just say, hey, anyone interested in or want to paint tonight? And then I guarantee you someone will get on and hang out with you.
Yeah, I'll be available at 9 or whatever. Yeah,
you know, the West Coast guys, and I know, you know, Ryan Munsell, some of the Pacific Northwest guys get on later.
I mean, it's like 2 a.m. my time, and they're just thinking about getting on.
You know, 9, 10 o'clock West Coast time. I know that Rashad will get on in the evenings. Also, too, we're getting some good Rashad's kind of been like a spearhead for playing on Universal Battle. I know he plays with Pat Allen and Ryan Munsell, and so there's a growing community for people playing Kings of War on Universal Battle. So if you're curious about that, that's a great way. It's basically a way to play games on your computer. It's a Universal Battle as a client that gives you all the really basic things to play a war game, like dice rolling mechanics and stuff like that. Just YouTube a video on it. It's a great resource for getting practicing lists, or if you just don't, you know, you haven't had a chance to get a game in and you just want to do that, it's good. And then, the season's almost over, Rob. Masters is almost upon us. It's crazy.
Yeah. Are you going to make your team?
Yes. And I think actually I would have made the team probably if we actually had like, you know, West Coast, we're very open, you know, as we, you know, as far as, hey, do you have an army that's painted? You want to be on the Masters team? You're good. Okay, you're good. But thankfully, I was able to do okay this year. I won a couple events. So, and that's another thing. I'm really excited. I think on the surface, we have 6 or maybe 7 players, maybe. Awesome. So we may only need 1 or 2 mercs or none at all. And then if the West doesn't need mercs, I don't think we'll need mercs. I can't think of another region that would need them. That's so awesome. we might have a fully fledged Masters, which I think would be incredible. Okay, so that's going to do us for tonight. And remember, until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by posting on our episode thread on the discussion forum found on manticgames.com. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.